Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
It's mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Guy Fawkes night has come and gone with the usual fire and brimstone, as I warned yesterday, with yobbos up and down the country hurling fireworks at each other, in one case throwing them at the police in Leeds. And if your night was anything like mine, you'll have been hearing explosions going off all the way through until about 2 a.m. Looks like I was right again yesterday when I was calling for a slight regulatory change to the way that fireworks are sold and also a massive, massive drawback on how many of these actual firework displays go on. We'll be continuing to take your calls on it today. It's clearly something that needs fixing, and we got some great responses. We want to continue that today. 0344 499 1000. Coming up this morning, the Prime Minister will be going to see the Queen to dissolve Parliament and to mark the first day of official election campaigning. Jeremy Corbyn is at a rally in Telford. Nigel Farage is going to the Lake District, and the Green Party are unveiling their manifesto too. Just in time for the Bristolians to be told this morning that you won't be able to drive a diesel car through the city of Bristol after 2021, for heaven's sake. Meanwhile, up in Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon has written to everyone asking for Remainers to unite behind the SNP to save the European Union. Exciting, isn't it? Just five more weeks to go. What a time to be alive. 0344 499 1000. And just to bring you that feeling of deja vu and a throwback to the 1970s, there are two big strikes planned for Christmas. The post office and the railways are grinding to a halt. Tremendous, isn't it? Will someone please tell the unions that it's actually 2019? And in full solidarity with the royal family and Queen Elizabeth II, I am also, too, rejecting any further wearing of animal fur. So I just want you to know that I'm not going to wear any fur from this point onwards and from this point forwards. Thank you very much indeed. That's doing my part for saving the planet. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, some of you may not remember the 1970s because you may not have been alive or indeed compos mentis enough to know what was going on. But I can assure you that all of these people who tell you what a great time it was, how it was really easy to be able to afford to buy your own home, how it was really great to be able to use the NHS when it was much better than it is now, and how it was really wonderful to be able to travel around Britain on the nationalised railway systems and all the rest of it. Well, the truth is, it wasn't great in the 70s because there were strikes all over the place, and as you were just hearing from Julia Hartley Brewer there, we used to sit around in the dark for most of the day, for most of the week. We didn't have enough heating or energy or oil or coal or gas to power the schools in which we were supposed to go. So the schools were basically only open for half a day a week for each particular year. The rest of the time you were supposed to hang around in the streets, hang around at home where there was no electricity so you couldn't watch any television. It was an absolute nightmare. Now, of course, we are told that we're going to have more misery coming up into Christmas because the unions have decided to have an unprecedented 27-day Christmas rail strike on South West Railways. Now, you have to say they do have a heart of some kind because they're not going to strike, they say, on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Well, guess what? There aren't any trains on Christmas Day or Boxing Day anyway, so the fact that you're not on strike for Christmas Day and Boxing Day means absolutely nothing. But we want to hear from some of you out there as well, 0344 499 1000, because not only are the railway workers going on strike, the post office workers are going on strike as well, and that may actually disrupt postal voting during the election. Let's talk to Professor Len Shackleton, editorial and research fellow at the Institute of Economic Affairs, and see what he makes of it all. Len, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Are we returning to the dark days of the 1970s? Because it's not feeling terribly nostalgic for me, I have to say.
No, not for me. Well, these strikes are worrying. They are throwbacks. They're not typical of the labour market as a whole, of course. These concentrations of union power at the old previously nationalised industries. You know, this is the biggest part of union membership in the private sector. Now, both the Royal Mail and the railways, of course, are slated for renationalisation.
Yes.
Under Jeremy Corbyn. Mm. So, you know, this is important because this could be a kind of precursor to what we're going to see. At the moment, the strike on South West is just a regional thing because that's a particular company they're striking against. But once they, should the whole thing be nationalised again, of course, we can expect national rail strikes, something which we haven't experienced for very many years.
No, quite. And the rail strike is interesting in itself because they've been arguing about this particular issue for which they are now striking for about 3 years, and it hasn't yet been resolved. And, of course, the unions will say it's the management's fault. They haven't been good enough at sorting out a reason for doing what they're doing. And the unions, of course, being quite intransigent, willing to put so many commuters and their journeys at risk. It's ridiculous.
Well, it is insane. This is about the business of guards operating doors. And,
yeah,
of course, there are large chunks of the railway where this isn't an issue at all. I come in on C2C from Shoebury Ness.
Okay. You know, into sounds like an injury song.
Yeah. Well, there is an injury song.
There is.
That, actually, yeah. Not by train, by road. But anyway, that train system has had no guards on it for ages and ages, and there's no problem there. London Overground doesn't have guards on it. The Tube doesn't have guards on it. DLR doesn't have guards on it. You know, there are not loads of fatalities as a consequence of this. This is an old-fashioned union job protection measure.
Exactly right. And so for the poor sort of humble commuter who pays for a railway season ticket, presumably they have no recourse to get some money back if the trains aren't running.
I don't know what the exact conditions are on South West. Different companies have different rules about these kinds of things.
Right. But generally speaking, I'm always very underwhelmed by the kind of the possibility of compensation. The train companies make it as difficult as they possibly can. If your train is late, they say, if it's more than half an hour late, you can get compensation. All you've got to do is fill out this impossible form, and then all you can do it online, which is even more impossible. And by the end of the time, you've spent half an hour trying to figure it out. You've given up.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, compensation is. I mean, most of the delays on the railway are the result of Network Rail's problems, which, of course, is nationalised.
Mm.
And there's a huge amount of compensation which actually paid over Network Rail to the operating companies, something like £300 to £400 million a year. Some of that gets back to the customers who've been delayed, but not enough of it, I think.
Yes, no, quite. And let's talk a little bit about the post office strike, because there are some who say that that's kind of politically motivated more than anything because of the fact that it's going to affect probably postal votes during the election, which is more likely to affect older voters, which is more likely then to have an effect on the Conservative Party.
Yeah, there may be something in that. I wouldn't particularly go down that route. I mean, clearly there are big problems with Royal Mail. What's happened there is that letter traffic has collapsed much faster than was expected. And although parcel deliveries have gone up, they've not gone up very, very quickly because there's lots of competition, of course, from other parcel deliverers these days. So you've got a real problem there. They've got a new boss in, a guy called Rico Black.
Mm.
There's a kind of arm wrestling going on here, I think, as well. I mean, it was quite a big vote for this strike. So I don't think it's a purely political thing. But
oh, no, I don't think it's purely political at all. That wasn't what I meant. I just meant that it could have that kind of effect, which would make it doubly irritating. Because if it's interfering with the sort of the process of an election, not for any particularly political reason with a large P, it's just wrong. Because, you know, the point is we haven't, I mean, although we are having more elections now than we've had since we brought in the Fixed Term Parliament Act that we used to have and we didn't have the Fixed Term Parliament Act. But, I mean, you know, if they are going to disrupt the process of the election, then is there not something that the government can do or that the authorities can do to put a halt to it?
Well, it's a difficult one, really. I suppose they could extend the period when postal votes are accepted, but that's only at the expense of delaying the results.
Mm.
That would be very difficult to handle, I think, these days with media leakage and all that kind of stuff. So I don't actually think there's much the government can do about this.
Right.
There is, of course, a question about whether we should be having so many postal votes. We're talking in terms of something like 8 million now.
Yeah, right.
No, that's not kind of people like, you know, old people who can't get to the polls or something like that. This is, well, I think it's partly laziness, but there's also a kind of suspicion that, well, maybe some groups are trying to fiddle this in some way.
And heaven forbid.
You know,
I mean, that would be dreadful. Indeed. But let's look at what they are planning to do. They're saying that they're going to probably have the first strike over 5 days, which will cover Black Friday, which is November the 29th. That's Cyber Monday. Two of the busiest shopping days in the calendar, when everybody goes mad and gets kind of sold a con job by all shops, and they go and buy things that they could have bought for the same money earlier in the year anyway. But obviously they'll want stuff delivered.
They will, but, you know, there are other companies who are doing this. You know, there's a lot of... I mean, one of the things which the unions don't like, of course, is there's a lot of casual labour in parcel delivery now. Yeah. You know, you get somebody turning up in their car and somebody knocking on your door and giving you something which comes from Amazon or somewhere. I mean, there will be ways around this. If they're giving enough notice, then companies will get around it, I think. And that will be to the detriment of the Royal Mail eventually.
Mm. You know? Yeah, but this is why I find it amazing, in a way, that they're still thinking that striking is the way forward. Because, you know, as you said, the post office has lost an awful lot of custom over time to various other courier companies and various other delivery companies. And you wouldn't have thought that they'd have enough of a foothold against their employers, i.e. the nation, to hold them to ransom at all?
No, I think it's a very difficult time for Royal Mail. But as I say, this is associated, I think, with the longer-term issue about renationalising the Royal Mail.
Yeah.
And, of course, if that happens, then we can expect to see, all sorts of regulations coming in to protect Royal Mail deliveries at the expense of other parcel deliverers in particular.
No, because there was a time when Christmas for the Royal Mail was a kind of boon time, wasn't it? I remember
I used to work on the Royal Mail.
Well, every student that could get their hands on a job at the post office over Christmas, because it was very well paid and the hours were not particularly tiring, and it was a brilliant sort of part-time job to have. I don't even know if they do that anymore.
I guess they probably do take on temporary workers, but I shouldn't think it's anything like the scale it used to be now.
No, right. And what about the unions, generally speaking, Len? Because are they still as powerful? I mean, we know they're still quite powerful within the labour movement, but in terms of the way that they did used to hold the country to ransom, I mean, I remember in the newspaper business, newspapers weren't published. The Times was not published for over a year, I seem to remember, back in the 70s, because there was a dispute with the print workers. And the same with before the Murdoch papers all moved to Wapping, you know, the Sun would quite often just not come out because somebody in the press, in the print room, didn't like one of the stories, you know?
Yes, that's right.
It was incredible. Well, I mean, what sort of power do they now have?
Well, union membership has fallen, dramatically. And now less than 25% of the workforce is actually unionised. It's largely concentrated in the public sector or in these kind of hangover things like Royal Mail, water, energies and things like this, which used to be nationalised, and there's still a big concentration of workers in them. But in the private sector more generally, most union membership is very low indeed.
Mm.
And what's particularly concerning about it for the union movement is that young people are virtually totally absent from the unions now. You know, tiny, tiny proportion of, say, 16 to 24-year-olds are actually in unions compared with the past.
Right. And so they must surely be in decline then, and their power must therefore be in decline, and their income must be in decline.
That's all true. And, of course, there have been mega mergers in the union movement to try to compensate for this loss of income and membership and so forth. But, you know, who can say what the future is? If Labour get back into power, they say they're going to introduce sectoral bargaining, they're going to make it much easier to become a union member, to get recognition and so forth. And we may well see some resurgence of union membership in some sectors.
Right. And so how do you see these two problems being resolved? Do you see the RMT somehow caving in and being given some more money and so therefore they'll walk away and suddenly the safety issues will disappear? As somebody pointed out to me this morning, if they were that worried about health and safety, they wouldn't allow so many people onto the trains in the mornings and in the evenings to stand there like sardines pressed up against each other.
Yes, we've all experienced that.
Sadly, we have.
Well, I don't see any short-term solution to this one. It does depend on what the outcome of the general election is. I think it'd be very worrying indeed if we go back to a nationalised railway. I think a lot of people want a nationalised railway. They see all the problems on the railways, but in my view, you ain't seen nothing yet. And, you were saying at the beginning, you were around in the 70s, you remember these problems, so do I. And I think a lot of younger voters now have no idea.
No, but it feels kind of like the death rattle. It feels like it's the sort of last throw of the dice from the RMT and from the Post Office Union as well. And if they don't get anywhere, and if they don't win, and they don't get what they want, I think it's all over for them, isn't it?
Well, possibly, but there's a great... People are a long time of dying, aren't they? I mean, unions have existed for 150 years or so, and I think to write them off completely might be a little short-sighted.
You're not accusing me of being short-sighted, Professor. For heaven's sake, you can't get away with that. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Listen, thank you very much indeed. Professor Len Shackleton, Editorial and Research Fellow at the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'd love to hear from you if you're with one of these unions, because, quite frankly, striking in this day and age, 2019 is the year, may I remind you, is the most ridiculous thing that I could ever imagine anybody wanting to do. Why would you go on strike because your union leaders tell you to do so? The union leaders, by the way, who live very high on the hog, who have all sorts of perks of the job, who often have preferred apartments given to them in London, who often have houses given to them in London, who often have cars that are driving them around in London, who often have very expensive meals out on the union funds, who basically tell you to go out on strike, from which you will receive no money. You might get some strike fund money, but you'll probably have to do without coming up to Christmas, right? They'll be fine. They'll be leading lovely, very fat cat-type lives. And you, on the other hand, will be manning picket lines, standing around braziers, trying to keep your hands warm in the middle of winter. Is that really the way forward?
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The dog days are over.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Scotsman says, what about ambulances and fire appliances in Bristol? Pablo has sent me a report in which it says that the latest diesel cars are well below emissions limits, according to recent tests. I have a diesel, says Giles, and a blue badge. Are they going to discriminate against the disabled? And Steve says, diesel cars are better. I did 250 miles on Sunday night, average speed around 55 at 74.8 miles per gallon. That's a 2-litre Merc. Less fuel burnt, less emissions. Well, exactly. The idea that Bristol are going to suddenly ban diesel cars is a nonsense. It's virtue signalling craziness, and I don't think it should be allowed to happen. But if you're in Bristol, we'd love to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. Right now, though, we're going to talk to the Dogs Trust. We're going to talk to Owen Sharp, specifically, who's the CEO of the Dogs Trust. We've been talking about fireworks only a little while ago, but this is not so much just about fireworks. This is about dogs and the purchase of dogs, because one of the things that happens around this time of year is people decide, oh, it'd be nice to have a dog, wouldn't it? It'd be really good to have a dog. The kids would love a dog. Let's get a dog. Let's talk now to Owen. Owen, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. Now, I've got a dog, so I'm going to declare my interest. First off, we went to a very reputable person to get the dog from as a puppy. And, we were properly vetted, because the person we got the dog from is a breeder who won't give it to anyone. She doesn't like the cut of your jib, if she thinks the kids are a bit too sort of rebellious and crazy, she doesn't give them. If people say, I'd like a dog to match my furniture, she doesn't give the dog, So, unfortunately, not everybody is quite as scrupulous as that.
No, that's true. And we are in a world where we're used to buying everything online, and unfortunately we found increasingly that that is a mechanism by which people are buying dogs and people are supplying dogs. And we've done some research, and we found that as we get closer and closer to Christmas, week on week, the number of people searching for buying a puppy goes up and up. And that's why that we're launching our Christmas advert, and we're reusing the phrase that actually we launched 40 years ago, which is "The dog is for life, not
yes.
Christmas."
Which is a great slogan, I have to say. It's one of those ones that almost everybody knows.
Yeah, it's true. Everybody knows it, but unfortunately, the evidence is it's not entirely landing. We know that we've improved many aspects of dog ownership, but we see the number of people getting dogs at Christmas and potentially giving dogs as gifts is still fairly high. And that for us at Dogs Trust, who are a rehoming organisation, means that we are seeing that the demand in the first half of the year goes up, and we think that is often because people are getting the wrong sort of dogs for them at Christmas time.
Absolutely right. Now, you've got Karen with you, who's from Essex. She's the owner of Dandelion, a Mexican hairless puppy. I'm not entirely sure what that looks like, Karen, but welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Thank you.
Now, Dandelion was one of a pair of puppies abandoned. Hard to believe that people abandon dogs. And where was he found?
She was found in a park in Wickford. The two of them were found in a shopping basket, wrapped in a blanket.
Goodness.
It's just awful. You know, that when they took them in, someone fanned them and handed them into the Dogs Trust.
Right.
You know, they were severely dehydrated. They weren't in a good way. And I just, you know, why do people do that? Why do they not take them to the Dogs Trust?
Right.
Why just leave them?
And also, what do people think a dog is going to be like? I mean, because I suppose what we should be saying to people, if they're not aware, is that it's a bit like having a baby. You know, you have a puppy which needs to be house trained. It needs to be shown
absolutely.
How to do everything. It has to be kept indoors until it's had its all its shots and it can mix with other dogs and all of that. But it's like having a child, isn't it?
It really. That's what we say indoors. We do laugh because it is actually like having another baby.
Yeah.
You know, she's fantastic. She's part of our family and we all love her to pieces.
Sure.
But it is a massive commitment.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you've got to put in the time, you've got to put in the energy, you know, you've got to be there for her.
Mm. And how old is a Dandelion now?
She's 7.5 months.
Oh, okay. So still quite young.
She's still a baby, yeah.
Does she do anything particularly naughty?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's, I won't say what she is, actually, but but we just, when she does do silly little things, we just love her to pieces, and she's just a baby, you know, she's just learning. She has started puppy training, and I was impressed. She did really well. So.
Yeah, my dog was as a Labrador, right? Terrible at obedience school, absolutely awful. It was the worst behaved dog ever. Wouldn't do anything. But now he's about five now, and about a year ago he finally kind of matured and stopped just running off and stealing people's sandwiches on the beach and that kind of thing. You know, but they're such a delight, aren't they?
They really are.
I mean, let me go back to you, because we've seen in the past a lot of problems with imported puppies and puppy sort of illegal puppy farms. Do you feel like there's more work can be done in that area?
Yeah, we do. And particularly puppy smuggling is an issue that Dogs Trust is doing a lot of work on at the moment. And one of the things about talking as well about kind of this dog is for life, not just for Christmas message is that the danger is that if we see demand ramping up around particular points in the time, then that is the time when we might be starting to make the supply chain wonky, as it were. In other words, we may be, you know, if you're getting a dog online and you're trying to pick what you think is the perfect designer breed for you, then there's a possibility that you're not getting that dog from the most reputable place. You may be linking into kind of elements of things like puppy farming or puppy smuggling. So there are lots of issues still around dogs. We would encourage as many people as possible to get rescue dogs, as Karen has just told you, and I've got to meet Dandelion this morning. A really great dog, and it's a great ending to a story that started so badly. And you have the opportunity to be part of that journey if you come and talk to us at Dogs Trust. We will find you the right dog. It just may not be bang on in time for Christmas, because that may well not be the right time to get that dog, but we will find you the right dog once we've gone through the conversation with you, figuring out what would be right for you.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Owen, thanks very much indeed. And Karen, thank you as well. And give our best to Dandelion, the dog who will have his first Christmas, I guess, coming up. Maybe we'll get some nice bones. Who knows? Who can tell? This is Talk Radio.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
There's no other. Tempted by the fruit of another. Tempted, but the truth is discovered.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We are your election station here at Talk Radio, taking you all the way through every twist and every turn and every uphill, every downhill, every gradient, every climb, every fall, everything that's going on during the election period, which of course is now officially underway. We're expecting Boris Johnson at Downing Street any moment now. But before we do that, let's go back to the phones. 0344 499 1000. Mark is in Bristol. Hello, Mark.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well indeed. Are you a diesel-driving Bristolian?
Well, worse than that, I am a courier company.
Oh, God.
Myself, yes. I've just bought a new van. It's 8 months old.
Right.
Diesel. There's absolutely nothing on the market suitable for courier at the moment, electric-wise. The only thing that's available is that Renault have got a small van.
Right.
Transit have recently bought out a version of the Transit, which is the only hybrid van available.
Right.
And what I mean by hybrid, I mean obviously battery and diesel.
Right.
And it'd be interesting to see whether that one's going to be banned.
And what's the price comparison like?
Oh, you're looking around 35,000 for the Transit.
Right. And one you bought less than that, I assume.
Significantly.
Right.
Yeah. Well, clearly.
Well, this is just madness, isn't it? I mean, what about the council's vans? I mean, the council are bound to have loads of diesel vans, which they will presumably replace with electric ones at the cost to the taxpayer.
Well, you know as well as I do. I mean, in Bristol, it's a nightmare with the traffic.
Yeah,
anyway.
Of course.
And you're quite right. There's only a couple of electric vans in Bristol that the council have got, and they're trialling them, but they do less than 80 miles.
Right.
And as soon as you put any weight in them, that reduces, and in the winter that takes the battery down as well. So
you
end up looking around like 30 miles.
Also, I mean, I've been to Bristol for a while, but my recollection of the street parking in Bristol is there's not much of it. And if you're going to try and put up a few, electric charging points, where are you going to get them?
You can. The only way that anyone's going to be able to charge vehicles is if it's going to be within about if you can charge a battery within about 10 minutes.
Yeah. There have to be those superchargers.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely spot on. That's the only ones that are going to work because the technology is just not there yet. It's just not there.
It's madness. What's this bloke all about? This leader, council leader. Do you know much about him?
Well, Rees. He's a joke. I mean, to be honest,
right.
he's virtue signaling, as you put it earlier.
Mm.
He wanted to be the first one to ban diesel. Well, brilliant.
But, yeah.
I mean, I do some sub work for Royal Mail as well.
Okay.
All their vans are diesel.
Right.
Yeah,
genius, isn't it? I mean, you could not make. I mean, I don't know what's gone on in this world that we now live in. I mean, when did these people get put in charge of it?
Well, They just got to use a bit of common sense. Perhaps they ought to put them in your tent.
Start injecting them with some, because it is incredible. It's unbelievable. Well, Mark, listen, we'll have to try and stop it. That's the only thing we can do is try and stop it. Maybe nail yourself to something or glue yourself to something so they can't take your van away from you, you know.
That's the only way you'll get anywhere, and that would be to join the extinction. Oh, no, I don't even want to go there.
No, you don't want to do that. No, blimey. Well, listen, I really appreciate your inside knowledge there, Mark. Thanks very much indeed. As I suspected, you see, the council themselves have got loads of vans, which will be diesel, which they'll have to replace. With what money? Oh, yeah, the council tax. Unbelievable. Let's talk to Susan, who's in Holland-on-Sea. Hello, Susan.
Oh, hello, Mike.
You want to talk about fireworks?
Yeah, I've got two things to say.
Okay.
I'm not a killjoy or anything, but the thing is, I've got a dog, a rescue dog.
Right.
He's very nervous of fireworks.
Yes.
If people could see these dogs, how they react, it's absolutely saddening.
It's awful, isn't it?
It is. And I was, if they had sort of sparklers, things like that, that haven't got that banging sound, and it was done properly, but you don't need the fireworks. I'm not being funny, but we don't need fireworks even on New Year's evening or anything like that. And I think, really, if they're going to only have it as a proper organised one, as you say, out somewhere where you're not really near houses or anything like that, they might have to travel people, and I think they should be banned from shops. I mean, my daughter's dog, now her dog is a young dog, it doesn't mind noises or anything, he was all right.
Yes.
They went out, not obviously with the dog, but they went out to watch fireworks near to where we live, and apparently the second table from them, a rocket firework fell down on somebody. I don't know any more about it, but that's what I heard from yesterday.
That's shocking, isn't it?
You see what I mean? And that was an organiser.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Susan, I mean, I think everybody would accept, even those of us who don't think it's a good idea because of our dogs or whatever, we'd all accept, Guy Fawkes Night, 5th of November, that's when it happens, OK? And you make plans to avoid it if you can.
Yeah.
But it goes on for so long now.
I know,
it's ridiculous.
And we've had this going on for days and days. I mean, I hope, he's settled now, he's all right. But it's, he goes in our cupboards, we can put stuff away afterwards, but everything's pulled out, he tries to hide in places, we have got places for him to go to and that in there, but he panics, and it's so, and that little pup, a little while ago, he died, that little dog.
Yes.
But you heard about
it. Isn't that awful?
I really think so, but I do hope something comes in place now, because as you say, there are people that don't seem, just buy all these things, let them off anywhere, anytime. They were going off late last night, about 9:30, 10:00.
Oh, later than that, where I was. I was hearing them after midnight, which they're not supposed to be doing.
I went out of my garden to do something. Bang, bang, from a I don't know where they're coming from.
It's incredible, isn't it? And, you live in a relatively quiet part of the world, don't you, Holland-on-Sea?
I mean, yeah, it is. It is, it's a lovely, lovely area where we live. But, it's all around the country, isn't it?
It is.
I really hope they do get strict on this now. I think they should ban all these fireworks from shops and only reputable, even there they've got to be careful. When they have these events, it's only that sort of thing and people won't be able to buy them.
No, you're absolutely right.
Bonfire, like you say, you do jacket potatoes and all that. That's great. And there's nothing wrong with a little fire, sparklers, if the children are being watched and that. But if these bangers and... I mean, it's like a war zone, isn't it?
Well, they've got so much louder. And I mean, I know we're probably sounding like a couple of old idiots here, but I mean, I'm sorry. It's very much different to what it was when we were younger. Once a year, have a bit of a blowout, buy some little fireworks, nail the Catherine wheels to your fence and all of that. It's quite good fun. But not now. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like sort of being in the middle of Baghdad or something during the war. Susan, thanks for your call. Let's talk to Adam, who's in Leeds. Hi, Adam.
Mike, good morning. How are you?
Very well, sir. What do you want to tell me?
Well, Mike, you're comparing the 70s to now. So I don't know why you're bringing this now and you're scaremongering people that we're going to go back to that time.
Well, how am I scaremongering?
Yeah, you are, Mike.
How? Are you scared?
I'm not scared at all.
Well, then it's not working then, is it?
I don't believe everything you say to us, mate.
Oh, that's good.
There's a lot of people who have common sense, like some of the Tory politicians. And they will believe everything that you say to them.
Well, lots of people have common sense, but unfortunately not enough of them. This is why I'm trying to educate everybody to have common sense, Adam.
Are you trying to educate them by bringing back the 70s, where you actually, that time where you lived?
Did you live in the 70s, Adam?
I was born in 1974.
Oh, so you don't really understand the 70s, do you? Because you were only a baby.
No, I don't, but I read about it.
Oh, you read about it. Okay, so I lived through it. You read about it. Which person do you think knows most about it, me or you?
No, I know you better. You know better than me. But
thank
what
you.
I'm saying is, you're bringing it back to the time that we are in now.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that we had a lot of strikes in the 70s. And the unions now are going to try and have a lot of strikes now, so they're trying to take us back to the 70s. That's what I said.
No, they will not take us back to the 70s in terms of the situation or the conditions that you're in.
So when there's a post office strike in 1976 and a post office strike in 2019, what's the difference?
Completely different.
How is it different?
The time has changed. The way we send letters or send emails or send or make phone calls or tweet or Facebook or WhatsApp, it's completely different. We will not go back to the same way that it was in the 70s.
All right. Well, let me ask you about the train companies then. So if there's a train strike in 1976 and there's a train strike in 2019, what's the difference?
Well, the difference is the strikes always happen that because the worker, they're trying to improve the situation that they work in or improve the company they work for.
Are you sure about that?
In the 70s, when the strikes were happening, we had government like Margaret Thatcher who trying to basically destroy the country, destroy the whole industry.
Do you know when Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister, Adam?
I think around the 80s.
She just said the 70s she was in.
Well, from her, from before her and comes to her era, that's why they tried.
Well, her era was in the 80s. She got elected in 1979, right? So the 70s was actually not the Tory area. It was the Labour area where the Labour Party grew. Before that, Edward Heath was the Prime Minister in 1970. You know, you don't know enough about the 70s to make a case, Adam.
But listen, the problem with the strike, what I'm trying to say to you is, we have to strike so we can have our rights properly.
Are you going to be striking, Adam?
If I can strike, I'm a self-employed, but if I have to strike...
So you're not in the strike, then?
No, I'm not.
Right.
I agree with the people who strike most of the time.
Why?
Because we have politicians.
Well, you agree with anyone that strikes, do you?
Not everyone.
Okay.
But I agree with the one who strike to change things and make them better for us.
Okay. What was the last strike that you agreed with?
The last one.
Yeah.
Was when the children went out of school to strike about the environment.
Oh, the climate strike.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you see, they're not really at work, so that's not really a strike, is it?
Well, they're missing their education.
So you agree with the fact that we should be changing the way that we operate in terms of save the environment, then, do you?
Of course, yeah.
Are you driving a car at the moment?
I drive a car, yes.
Yeah, what sort of car?
It's a Ford Tornillo.
Is it diesel?
It's a diesel Euro 6.
Diesel. Don't you think you should give that up, then?
I'm changing my car to a newer one that is hybrid.
A hybrid, good.
Within the next 6 weeks.
Oh, good. So you'll be playing your part in saving the planet then?
That's what I'm trying to do. I mean, you don't believe in that. I don't know how you not believe in that. You seem to me like have the same ideology as that Trump has. Like,
yeah, that's right, yeah. I'm just like Donald Trump. Exactly like me, he is. We have a lot in common. I'll tell you what I don't believe a load of nonsense, Adam, like you do, right? I do not believe, for example, that we are in a climate emergency. I've just explained to you that even the people that call it a climate emergency are only calling it that so that the stupid people will think it's an emergency. That's why they're doing it.
Michael, the stupid people is the people who are like you who don't believe on it. It's not the people who believe on it.
Right. So by changing your car to a hybrid, what do you think is going to change about the world then?
Well, if I do my part, you do your part, everyone do his part.
And what's going to happen then?
It will change. We will change.
You're going to change the climate. Do you really believe that you think I'm stupid, right? You actually think that by changing your car, you're going to change the climate. That's how thick you are.
I'm not thick because you think if I change my car, nothing will change.
Nothing will change. Nothing's going to change.
Thick or you're thick.
Nothing.
Well, Michael, listen, Michael, I think you are sick.
Do you?
And you call the people who believe in the climate change stupid, but I think you are stupid.
Well, that's
and
fine.
The people who don't believe on the climate change are the ones who are stupid.
Okay.
Because Because if you think like that,
yeah.
And basically you're trying to because people listen to you on the radio
yes.
station, and they think that you, they look at you as a role model,
yes.
and they think, oh, Michael is telling us the truth.
Yes, where this I am telling you the truth.
No, you're not saying the truth. You're trying to brainwash people.
No, I'm not. You said to me that you don't believe anything I say.
Yeah, because you don't have any common sense, and
right.
you're trying to people.
I see. Okay. Well, listen, Adam, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I haven't been called thick for a long time. Good luck with the new car, and good luck with saving the planet. And when you get the new car, please call in and tell us how the climate has changed as a result of your new purchase. Thank you very much indeed. Adam's in Leeds. I'm in London. You are everywhere else.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, the land of common sense, as Adam has just said. I think he's got it round his ears a little bit, but never mind. He will learn. 0344 499 1000. It is time, of course, to welcome the delicious LaDonna Harvey, who is here from KOGO Radio in San Diego. LaDonna, very good morning to you.
And a good morning to you.
Now, I must warn you that the Prime Minister, Mr. Boris Johnson, may be appearing at any moment out through the door of Downing Street. And if he does, I'm afraid we're going to have to dump you unceremoniously, according to my producer, off the air. I hope you don't mind.
No, it happens to me all the time in my dating life. Why would this be any different?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Now, we're going to talk about Donald Trump in a bit, but a fascinating little sort of tale came my way yesterday about Amy Roback from ABC News. She's a well-known TV anchor who was caught on a hot mic, as it was described to me, talking to her producer when she thought she was off air. It's a lesson in broadcasting, isn't it, to never say anything when you're near a microphone in case it's still on.
Yes, that is absolutely true. But bless her heart for saying it. She was furious and said that she had been sitting on the Epstein story for 3 years and
right.
ABC refused to air it.
Yeah, and more interestingly, from our point of view, she says basically Buckingham Palace had sort of put pressure on ABC not to run it. They have since denied that and said it's nothing to do with them and it's all to do with ABC and the ABC lawyers. It sounds to me like she had an interview with one of these women who was whistleblowing on Epstein and Prince Andrew and all the rest of them and Bill Clinton, and they didn't think it stood up. That sounds what it sounds like, doesn't it?
It's what it sounds like. And she says that the girl, whose name is Virginia, I believe, she's a woman now, had pictures and had everything that she needed to back it up, and that Prince Andrew was involved, and that Buckingham Palace had squashed it and basically threatened ABC, saying you won't get to interview Prince William and Kate if you don't squash this story.
Right. I mean, presumably, apart from anything else, ABC must be pretty unhappy about all of this coming out, mustn't they?
Well, they should be, because NBC's been dragged through the mud over it because of Ronan Farrow and what he uncovered over Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
NBC has been moving fast to try to squash it. And it's just, it will not be squashed. It just won't. This guy was an extraordinary, very successful pedophile. And, you know, we know that. He was convicted of it. But the extent, I think, is still yet to be uncovered. And I think that it probably will bring down quite a few very high-profile people.
Right. And one of the things she says in the in this off-air discussion is that one of the reasons they weren't interested at the time was they were all saying, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who it is. It's not really a story for us. But surely the people who he was associating with would have made it a story.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. And it's a lie to say nobody knew who Epstein was.
Right.
He had been 10 years before, or probably 7 years before, when he was sent to prison. And those names have come up before. Jeffrey Epstein was not an unknown. ABC, if they told her that, was absolutely trying to cover something up.
Yeah, and that's where it starts to get tricky, doesn't it? Because my sort of journalistic instinct tells me surely they wouldn't be so stupid as to cover it up, because I've worked for lots of news organisations and people always ask me, you know, were you ever told not to do something? And I never have been, you know? I've never been told we can't do that, right? Other than for a legal reason. And generally speaking, if it was for a legal reason, you didn't have enough on the story, that was fair enough. And I mean, if this is more than that, then that's going to be, I mean, potentially ruinous for ABC.
Oh, absolutely. I think the networks are in a lot of trouble right now because if they have at a very high level squashed stories, you know, it's less that people will trust them. You squash the story because it was involving really highly placed, powerful people. That's not what journalists do. And I myself have never been told not to do a story. And if I was told not to do a story, I would go on the air and do the story the first thing.
well, exactly. But unless it's legally something that you're going to put the station in jeopardy on.
Right.
Which it could be. I mean, it could be that they didn't have enough on the guy and that it was one woman's word against everybody who's very powerful's word. And sometimes those people have lawyers who make it very difficult.
They can make it very difficult, but ABC is made of money, and you have lawyers, too.
Yes, right.
And you meet their lawyers in court, and you go, give it your best shot, babe.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Talking of giving it your best shot, the Trump impeachment scenario carries on. We've now got a guy who has basically flipped on his recollections of what happened.
He sure has. His name is Sundlin, and he is a key witness in the House impeachment investigation, and said that, yeah, you know, now that I've refreshed my recollection, it appears that, that there was a little bit of a threat there. I guess he's listening to the other testimony, and he's decided, well, yeah, okay, maybe there was a little coercion there.
And so, I mean, we are still pretty much where we are, though, right? We're not any closer to an impeachment procedure, particularly.
We're getting a little bit closer, but it's, you know, they still don't have quite the smoking gun, as we like to call it.
No.
In order to convict, basically. I mean, it's a trial, face it, and they need enough evidence to convict, and right now they just don't have it.
Right. And this is, again, a new kind of journalism technique where we hear, and it's happening in this country as well, the next report that comes out is going to be the one that nails it. You know, the next report that comes out is going to be the one that's going to be filled with all of the really, really juicy, incriminating stuff. And then when that comes out, it's not.
Right. And so far they have failed to actually, you know, completely annihilate the president. And in order to impeach, I mean, they are going to have to prove to voters, not just to Congress, that they have fantastic evidence and they absolutely know that he did it, period, end of sentence.
Yeah.
Right now they don't have it locked up.
Incredible stuff. LaDonna, thank you very much indeed. LaDonna Harvey from KOGO Radio in San Diego, California, bringing us the latest from there and keeping us updated on the whole Trump scenario, which seems to be going on and on and on. I think for as long as he's president, even if he gets to win a second term, there'll be some impeachment process going on concurrently with him actually running the White House.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.